President Trump announces his Supreme Court nominee tonight. He then heads to Brussels for the NATO summit. And after that, he goes to the United Kingdom, where he'll meet with Prime Minister Theresa May. And a week from today, President Trump sits down with Russian President Vladimir Putin in Helsinki, Finland. Jim Walsh is here and now security analyst. He's with the MIT Security Studies Program and joins us in the studio. And boy, what a week it's going to be for Donald Trump and for watchers like you. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Fun, I think.
This is all against the backdrop of continuing tension between the United States and North Korea. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo met with North Korean officials this weekend, and Pyongyang at the time accused the U.S. of unilateral and gangster-like demands for denuclearization. Pompeo dismissed that charge yesterday. Let's hear him.
I am counting on Chairman Kim to be determined to follow through on the commitment that he made. And so if those requests were gangster-like, they are, the world is a gangster, because there was a unanimous decision at the U.N. Security Council about what needs to be achieved.
That's Mike Pompeo. Jim Walsh, have the United States and North Korea actually achieved anything as a result of the historic summit in Singapore?
Well, I would say yes. We have a moratorium on nuclear tests, a moratorium on long-range missile tests. We got our detainees back. That's all to the good. Obviously, there's this other big thing in front of us, denuclearization. And so I can see why people might think that this is a setback. But for Korea watchers, gangster-like is an oldie but a goodie. We've heard that many times before. It's sort of typical North Korean behavior, but I think it's also more than that. You know, the big difference between the U.S. and North Korea is, over the years, the many years, is the U.S. says, stop doing bad stuff and we'll be your friend. And North Korea says, let's be friends and then we'll stop doing bad stuff. And at the summit in Singapore, the president sort of edged over more towards the North Korean position of, you know, let's be friends and we can work out the details. But I'm guessing that Pompeo showed up with a list of things he wanted them done now, and sort of ordered them to do it, and that didn't go over so well.
Well, getting back to denuclearization, how big a gap is there between what the U.S. and what North Korea think that term means?
Well, I'm sure it's quite a gaping chasm, but it's a chasm that can, you know, you can build a bridge over if you take it step by step. I think the U.S. position, we don't know what was said in those meetings, but the U.S. position may have been, well, you need to denuclearize first. We need to do it in a year, which is not really practical, but we need to do it. And then once you do that, then we can talk about things we'll do for you. But, you know, no negotiation works that way. The North Koreans, understandably, are going to want this, to use an old phrase from past negotiations, action for action. They're going to want the U.S. to do some things if they're going to do some things. And it's not clear to me that the U.S. has figured out what they are prepared to do for the North Koreans.
So do you think Donald Trump might have been played by North Korea in this diplomatic go-round? He pledged that the U.S. would give up its routine war games with South Korea. In hindsight, was that a mistake?
No, I don't think it was. Now, listen, both sides took what are reversible actions. So the North Koreans blew up a test tunnel. They can rebuild it. The U.S. has suspended military exercises, but we can go back to them. I think what the summit did was create an opportunity to move in a different direction. Now, the question now is follow-up. Does the White House, despite internal divisions about how to proceed, do they have a game plan, and do they have a game plan that's realistic? Simply issuing demands is not a way you conduct a negotiation, so they're going to have to figure out – both sides are going to have to figure out what they're willing to give up.
So what would be realistic? I mean, North Korea is continuing to make nuclear fuel, according to U.S. intelligence. We don't know if President Trump believes that or not. How could negotiations be picked up again and become more productive?
Well, I think working groups would help to talk about the range of things that North Korea is interested in, whether it's a peace accord or the end of the Korean War, that sort of thing. But I think both sides have to – it can't be all for one, you know, one side does everything and the other side does nothing. I think the North Koreans are naturally suspicious. They think they're surrounded by big powers who are out to get them, whether that's China, Japan, or the U.S. And so they're always going to be, you know, waiting for the other side to make a move because they don't want to get played either. Neither side wants to get played. And the only way you deal that is if you sit down and both sides talk about what they'll do for each other.
So the president is going to be heading to Brussels for the NATO summit. NATO's big concern is Russian aggression in places such as Ukraine, but the president has expressed friendship toward Moscow. He's going to be meeting with Vladimir Putin after the NATO summit. What do you think NATO members are going to be watching for, perhaps anxiously so, in the Trump-Putin meeting?
Oh, I think they dread these meetings. They're afraid they're going to get sold down the river, that the president's going to make some impromptu proposal that locks them in and is against their interests. I mean, let's be honest. In some ways, the president's NATO policy has been successful. He has gotten the allies to kick in more money to pay for the cost of defense. That's a win. But it's not just about policy. It's also about emotion. And it's pretty clear that he doesn't like the Europeans. And the Europeans can see that. And they've learned after a year that playing nice doesn't really get them anyplace either. So I think at this point, they're just trying to survive and hope nothing bad goes wrong.
Jim Walsh, I know there's one other thing that you want to mention before we say goodbye, which is what?
Well, I love these speed rounds. And one of the issues that got overlooked over the holiday weekend was that the terrorist group, Al-Shabaab, based in East Africa, announced that it was banning plastic bags because it hurts the environment. So we have a terror group who says murdering civilians, yes, plastic bags, not so much.
You are all over it. Thank you. Jim Walsh, here and now security analyst with MIT's Security Studies Program. Thanks a lot, Jim.
Thank you.